Just another day up in the cash shop. Keep it take, fucked up. Keep it take, keep it take, fucked up. Another day up in the cash shop. Keep it take, fucked up. Keep it take, keep it take, fucked up. Hello out there. Welcome back to the new season of the VMP Anthology Podcast, which is our 19th season. It feels like just yesterday we did our season devoted to Blue Note, which was our first season. Now here we are on the 19th season. And I'm here today and this season, these four episodes that are now in your feed, to talk to you about the story of Memphis rap. If you have not heard, VMP recently partnered with Now Again Records to make a box of 9 albums, that is 11 LPs, that aims to tell the story of Memphis rap basically in the 90s. And if you're not aware, Memphis in the 90s was the murder capital of the U.S. And it was a city that really had sort of gotten abandoned by the state of Tennessee. Nobody was actively really trying to make the place a better place. The previous industries, the Rust Belt sort of industries had dried up. And then furthermore, the culture of Memphis had sort of withered and dried up in the 90s, because you had Stax Records close in the 70s. You know, a lot of the ways for kids to see their way out of Memphis had sort of disappeared. And what you had was a generation of teenagers who were stuck in a situation that they, you know, had to make the best of, I suppose. And the way that they did that was by making rap releases. They made them primarily on tapes. And these tapes often didn't have covers. If they did, they were usually just Xeroxed. They were lo-fi budget tapes. But this rap music is some of the most daring, adventurous, ahead of its time kind of music. This was anticipating what it would be like when everybody could have a computer and make rap music. These guys were doing that before. These guys were coming up with their own vernacular. Looking for the chewin' is a phrase that is in Memphis. You know, this is a distinct, unique rap culture that, because it was in a pre-internet time and because it was all on cassette tapes, it is not something that has ultimately endured. And because it came during a time of Memphis history when it was the murder capital and a lot of the artists were involved in some of the criminal elements in Memphis out of necessity, because there was no economic opportunity for them, the city of Memphis has not celebrated the likes of Skinny Pimp, Gangsta Black, Carmike, Little Said. These guys are not in the Stax Museum of Soul Music. They are not in the Memphis Music Hall of Fame. And so this box set that we have partnered with Now Again on is really an opportunity for these artists to, for the first time in some cases, get paid properly for their work. This is an opportunity for them to see their work properly archived, and sometimes with credits for the first time. And it's also an opportunity to tell the story of this scene, of these albums, of these artists. And so this box, like I said, 9 albums, 11 LPs. It runs the gamut from Gimme Some Family's self-titled mixtape. We have Carmike's Coming At Ya Ass, Gangsta Black's Breaking the Law, MC Money and Gangsta Gold, The Heart of Frasier. These are dark, heavy, incredible records. And a lot of these artists have never really been interviewed at any length, because they were popular in an era before the internet. So this box, and its liner notes more specifically, are the first time that this story has really been told widely. And you have somebody to thank for this story finally being out. It's Tori McAdams, who worked on this box for Now Again and Vinyl Me Please. He's a producer. And he also wrote the listening notes for this box. And you will get a comprehensive cultural history of Memphis as filtered through the 90s rap scene. But he also, more importantly, got to sit down with a bunch of the people that are involved in the Memphis rap story. And a lot of these people have never been interviewed. Some of them still didn't want to be interviewed. But the people that he did interview, we got this tape that you're now going to hear in this season that
it just, it feels like you're getting a cultural history that did not exist prior to listening to this stuff. Nobody was sitting down with Little Sed and talking to him what it was like in the mid 90s rap scene in Memphis. Nobody was talking to any of these people and documenting this. And this is the opportunity that this scene, that these artists have needed. And it feels so edifying for us here at Vinyl Me Police to support this and to put this out and to put out this podcast. So this season of the podcast is going to work. I'm your host. I'm really just the setup man for Tori doing these interviews. We tried to do as few cuts as possible and just try to give you as straight of interviews as we can. What it was like to be like you were the third person at the table as Tori talks to all of these people who are involved in the Memphis rap story. So this first episode, we thought the best place to start is the place sort of where the Memphis rap scene started itself, which was the auto shop of an immigrant named Mr. Z, who did all of the car stereos for the hustlers in Memphis. But his main cultural contribution to Memphis was he was a guy who would buy tapes for $3 or $3.50 wholesale, and then he would sell the tapes. And so many of Memphis rap releases came through his front door that he was essentially like the distributor for most of Memphis rap without even knowing it. He just knew that he was selling tapes to guys who were buying new tape decks and new stereos for his cars. It's this crazy story. So you get to hear Tori in the shop at Mr. Z's. So you're going to hear people walk in. You're going to hear a phone ring a couple times. You're going to hear like the business of Mr. Z's happening around Tori while he talks to Mr. Z. But you get to hear Mr. Z's wild story, how he was an Iranian immigrant who ended up in Memphis, how DJ Paul and Juicy J met at his store, that he might be, you know, accidentally responsible for 3-6. It's a wild story, and you're going to hear it now. Tori talking Meisters.
What did you leave because the Shah was overthrown?
No, I came over here to get education and go back.
Really?
Yes.
Was Memphis the first place you came?
Yes, Memphis was the first place I came. Then I went to Arkansas, Walnut Ridge, a small town, for 4 months. I went over there and to the college, and then I came back here and I stayed here. Then I went to Lemon Home College. I graduated in 1982.
Okay.
Then I went to college. Then I started working. I started working at McDonald's.
In where?
McDonald's.
Oh.
Yeah. Before that, well, let me go back. When it was the Iranian crisis, after like 6 months, I came in because the Iranian crisis started 1988. So my father was sending money to me to go to the college, and but everything stopped. I couldn't get no money.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't know I have a job, I didn't have nothing to eat. And then I used to go to this man help wanted, you know,
mm-hmm.
for find a job. I wasn't handy or anything, you know. I used to go with a friend of mine, Hassan Salehi, and he used to buy a donut and one small coffee and divide it.
Wow.
And so can eat and stay. So nobody would give us a job because the Iranian crisis.
Wow. Because what did you study in college?
Business administration.
Where in Iran were you born?
Iran, Shiraz.
Okay. Were your parents in music at all, or they were?
No, nobody were in the music. I always liked music. I always listened to music, but I never. No. My family was right there, but when I was here, Spanish flag came in first, and then then start people. They are selling all those tape on the street. Mm-hmm. What I did. They came in and I saw buying the tape and selling the tape. And so then after that, Paul, Juicy J, and Acoustic Nigger, and what's his name? All those DJ. And Squeaky, DJ Squeaky. So, and that time, when the tape came in, each one about like 100 or 200, and start selling so fast. Like I was selling like about 50 to 100 tape a day from different one. So, and I just bought probably a couple of $1,000 tape from each one or more.
How did you end up doing car stereos?
Well, I went to McDonald's. I got hired over there in McDonald's, but after a week, they said, you don't have no green card. And what did happen? I couldn't speak English good. They told me how to, would you sweep the floor for me? And I couldn't understand what sweep means, because y'all call ironing. And then I thought sweep means, you know, grooming. So everybody laughs, so they fire my ass. Then I came back, I was looking for a job. Finally, I went to the University Park Cleaners on McLean, and I got a job. So I went to school, I came back 3 o'clock, go work over there, and then they had 3 laundry mats. I used to clean those laundry mats for $45 a week. And I have to go every night, lock that doors, and people right there, still washing, still right there, mopping. And then I came back, and actually my ex-wife's stepfather and doing selling brass.
Okay.
And so I saw getting on the corner of the street and selling paddling, you know, brass, and then stereo start coming in, you know, like a couple of radio, a couple of speakers, a few equalizer. Mm-hmm. They were not that many, about 2 or 3. So I'll continue that, then start getting big. Then I went all over the most of the state of America, you know, just work paddling on the side. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I start wholesaling while I was state to state on the ground. I was wholesaling to small stores. And then I start opening the wholesale business.
So you said your father-in-law was selling brass?
Yeah. And my brother-in-law was selling a couple of radios and tools paddling on the side.
Okay. But you were like going state to state selling brass or stereos or both?
Brass, both. Okay. It was just like about 3 radio, 3.
But brass was like the real thing.
Yeah, brass was busy. And then the stereo started picking up because, mm-hmm. you know.
This was in like the early mid 80s?
84, okay. 85.
So when did you get the physical Mr. Z's store?
Well, I was always, you know, I started with Mr. Z because the last name is Zarshenos, and my ex-wife said, you know, Mr. Z is a good name, so
it is.
I agree with it, and it catch it, you know. But I think 84,
Okay.
And I stopped paddling, and then I opened the wholesale business with my ex-brother-in-law. So it didn't work out. So after 3 years, I left, and then went on the corner, which is close to Sears building, I opened a small business first, you know, I started again after, because I was broke after, after they got separated, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I started doing that one, then I came back, I bought this building, I rented for a while, then I bought it.
What year was that?
That was 1986, something like that.
Okay.
Don't remember exactly. So, and then in 1990, it was 1988 when I open up this, and in 1990, this steady business got so big, Kickbox came in, and nobody, you know, didn't know anything about Kickbox. I even didn't know. So the Champ and Kickbox came in, and during 1990, people had a lot of money. When did 1990, actually 88, they were people selling a lot of drugs, and they didn't know what to do with their money.
Right.
They couldn't spend it to buy a house. They couldn't put it in the bank. And
right. You so, can only really spend it on like physical assets.
Yeah, they go buy a car for $300-$400. They bring it here, you know. 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 system on each car, and then by the time we were finished, the oil was all over my ground in my garage, and then we have to boost it up, we have to run it out. So they come back after 3 months, they had the all chrome engine, everything, you know, $2,000-$3,000 paint job. And they would buy anything. Anything they could get, they buy, because they didn't know. They had so much money, they didn't know. They were making $1,000, $2,000 a day.
I assume that's what kept all the stereo stores afloat at the time, right?
Yes. Yes.
Did you ever have any problems with those guys, or they were just regular customers?
Regular customers. And they are, you know, they went to jail for 10, 15 years, and they still come back. They used to call me and say, "Hey, Z, can you send me $50, $20, $100? So I sent them, because they were spending $10,000, $20,000 each one a year. So
wow.
I helped them out. And they see when they go to jail, they came back here and say, and then they start doing it again, you know, and they bang. And, you know, it was booming. It was booming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this wasn't just a stereo shop. It was everywhere. Go to the mall or buy gold chain, you know. You could sell shit. They would buy shit.
Yeah, I know. I know how that.
Because they didn't know what to do with the money.
Yeah. So what year do you think Spanish Fly came in?
It was... Spanish Fly came in 1988.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, no, get me wrong. 1993. That's what they started. Business started 1988 started, and after 1990 everything was booming. Mm-hmm. Until 2000 when Bush got in the thing, so mm-hmm. become a president, so drug was bad, so they put everybody, you know, in jail, and they put a lot of pressure on it.
You noticed that in your business?
Huh?
You noticed that crackdown in your business?
Wow. Yeah. And I knew the customers, you know, I know all of them. But what they were doing, they were very smart. They sell the drug to the 16, under 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
And sell them. So they go to jail. Then the drug dealer could pay $1,000, $2,000, get them off.
Right.
It's honestly. But after 2000, when the Bush came in, everything started going bad. Economy went bad. Memphis economy was running really, honestly. I mean, I know the drug was bad to do,
mm-hmm.
but they help Memphis economy. You could open anything and you can make money. Wow. Any job.
This episode of the Memphis Rap Anthology Podcast is brought to you by the VMP Discord server. Looking for a place to interact with other VMP members and with VMP staffers? Want to stay up to date with what's happening in the store and in Record of the Month? Want to debate about which Essentials release is the best ever? Head to the VMP Discord. Anyone can sign up at discord.gg/vinylmeplease. Every quarter, our staff does an AMA that's private to Discord members, and you can ask VMP whatever you'd like in real time. Sign up now at discord.gg/vinylmeplease. And now, back to the show. Money mo, niggas on the track for dope. I was only 14, snaking on some damn soap, trying to break a junkie bitch, and then I get my dick sucked. Why you running your cock sucker, bitch? My pockets rolled up. I was into gambling, nigga hit the concrete. When I knock the socks off, you can talk your way ass off. My stepdaddy Durham taught me how to play a blind.
How much were you paying for each tape wholesale?
I was paying about $350. We were selling them for between $300 to $350, and then we're selling them $599 plus tax. I came a few dollars on it.
So, like $2.50 profit on each tape. You sold a couple thousand tapes a month, or
more than that.
Oh wow!
We're selling about maybe 5,000 tapes a month.
Wow.
You know,
did you keep track of what sold?
Yeah.
Do you still have those charts anywhere or no?
Well, I think you know which one, but the bestseller was Paul.
Huh.
Spanish for Life was good. Actually, Skinny Pimp started with that. I'm a Skinny Pimp. You know, have you heard that?
Skinny Pimp.
So I didn't know anything about it, and people were buying it, and I got his number from one of the customers, and I said, "Hey, Skinny, I want to buy your tape." I said, $10 a piece. So I'm not gonna give you $10 a piece. Then I said, "I'm paying like about $3.50 for everybody. If you want it, I sell it. If you don't want it, just go to the street seller." So he came back. You know, I was selling a lot of Skinny Pimp tape. The bestseller was Skinny Pimp, Paul, Juicy J came in. Actually, Juicy J and Paul, they met each other right here.
What's going on?
So, you know, Juicy J and Paul meet each other right here, and that's why they got together.
Huh. Would the guys hang out around at the shop or no?
Who?
The guys who sold you tapes, would they hang around?
About 20, 30 minutes, you know, so the day. Sometimes I was believed I have to wait about 20 minutes, 30 minutes to be able to, you know, to take care of my customers first. And then.
How did you learn to, I assume you learned how to install car audio stuff, right?
Actually, honestly, I've been doing this for almost 40 years. And I cannot hook up no radio, no app, no speaker, none of those.
Really? That's kind of crazy.
Yeah, but I have people to hook them up.
Yeah, yeah.
Because if I'm not in the front to sell the merchandise, if I go in the back, I will lose more money than I stay in the front. So I hook up one radio with help. That was 1986. That was easy. I mean, 4 or 5 bar. Right now, our computer is so hard to do anything.
Did you like the music that these guys were making?
Honestly, I don't like rap. I still don't like rap. I never listened. I never took a tape to my house or in my car to listen to it.
Really? Huh.
But I had demand for that.
Yeah.
And I still, you know, actually I got a couple of DVD I just saw, you know, in my office, and it's a long time ago. But honestly, no.
What kind of music do you like?
I listen to all kind of music, but I like a oldie and goodie, mm-hmm. you know, and then I like some, what's it called, in downtown they do it, I cannot think of it, like Marvin Gaye, you know, and soul. All of them are soul music. I like, you know, I listen to those soul music.
Iran had a lot of Western music or Western style music when you were young, right?
Yeah.
So before, I assume you knew at least some American music before you even came here, right?
Well, actually, when I came over here, I didn't know how to speak English at all. Wow. I knew from 1 to 6, he, she, it, that, but I didn't know how to use it.
Wow.
So I have to start from scratch. So even if I was listening to it with the music, we just danced with it.
Yeah.
I still don't listen to the music, right? I don't learn them. I just listen to them, and it's a good music, it's pretty good.
Right.
I don't hear the words, I just
don't
pay attention to it much.
What made you decide to come to the U.S. instead of any other country?
My older brother was over here, okay. And he graduated and he was going for the get his doctoral, and so he was in Memphis, and not knowing English or anything, and knowing the country, knowing the culture, so I just came over here to start.
Down with the click, kicking the nose on the main one. Making these niggas drop it off or catch them while they sleep. Down with the click, kicking the nose on the main one.
Took his people, why? Hair and bone, ain't his crack not cotton.
Down with the click, kicking the nose on the main one. Making these niggas drop it off or catch them while they sleep. Down with the click, kicking the nose on the main one.
Took his people, why? Hair and bone, ain't his crack not
cotton. It's Friday. I hit the hype, and then me and the wind beat my nigga against the girl because bitch, it's the weekend. This man, a motherfucking rob, let's go and hit them bitches like screwed up my nigga smoked out. Who's ready to make up little stein?
This season of the VMP Anthology podcast is hosted and executive produced by Andrew Winnestorfer. All interviews were conducted by Tori McAdams, who is a producer on this box and wrote the listening notes booklet as well. This season is produced and edited by Sydney Berlinger. A special thanks to Tori for doing the interviews and for all of our guests for sitting for them. And a special thanks to our friends over at Now Again Records for spearheading this box and for partnering with us on it. And before we go, a reminder, listen to more Project Pat.